Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
Got three very different films this week, and each one of them is actually a good movie, although I'm going to save the very best for the last. Let's start out with You Hurt My Feelings. It's a nice movie. I had a good time watching it. It was written and directed by Nicole Holofcener, who has a talent for this kind of movie, the sort of little independent sort of dramedy, comedy-drama kind of thing. Friends with Money is maybe the work of hers that sort of stands out in my mind from back in, I think, 2006. Anyway, You Hurt My Feelings is not only a film by Nicole Holofcener, but it stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who, of course, is a very major personality. And I have to say, I was never able to get into Seinfeld, and she never appealed to me in Seinfeld at all. And that's one of the reasons I never particularly got into the show. But Veep is such an astonishing piece of work all the way through, from very beginning to end. So that's when I really became an admirer of Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And she's really good in this movie. It's just the kind of part that works out very well for her, although she is matched very well by Tobias Menzies, who plays her husband. And then there's various major and minor supporting roles along the way. Anyway, You Hurt My Feelings has two main characters. Beth, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who is a writer, and she does other things too, but mainly she's a writer. And she's written a memoir, which was very successful, and it's really, really done very well, and she's very well known now and all that. She's not, a big deal celebrity or anything, but yeah, it did well. And now she is working on her second book, and she's just getting it finished up, and she's waiting to hear from her agent. And it turns out the agent just doesn't think it's quite there. Or at least it isn't quite there yet. Or at least it isn't quite there, and it's not sure whether it's going to get there. So this upsets Beth very much, and she's trying to get over this disappointment, and that's one of the themes that runs through the movie. Her husband, Don, is a psychotherapist, and he has a run of different kinds of patients, clients who come to see him, and some of them really sort of annoy him, and he's sort of wondering if he's really accomplishing everything he wants to accomplish with his career. And they also, by the way, have a son who works in a marijuana dispensary, a store, and that's sort of a little comical subplot in the movie. He is also an aspiring writer, in his case a playwright. And there are some rather amusing scenes that involve him both in the store and outside it. Anyway, the big turning point in You Hurt My Feelings comes when Beth and a friend of hers are in a store, and their husbands are there as well, and the two women are together, and they kind of come upon the husbands unexpectedly, and Beth hears her husband Don telling his friend that he doesn't really like her new book very much at all. And she overhears this, and it really, really, really bothers her. He's been telling her all along he likes it, he's been supportive, he's been on her side, and now she's finding out that he secretly didn't like it at all. So that is certainly a big explanation for the title of the film, You Hurt My Feelings. And it's also the sort of, if you want to say, a dramatic turning point of the film, it definitely is that. This movie, again, is more of a comedy drama than a straight-out drama. It's got a lot of very funny little things in it. But the dramatic turning point comes at that point, and then the husband and the wife have to deal with each other's hurt feelings, and she's so upset with him, and there's a lot of just uncertainty about where each of their careers is going and whether this might really put a strain on their marriage, which, by the way, has certainly seemed to be a really good marriage. They seem to get along very nicely, to be something you don't see all that often in the movies these days. A pretty contented, middle-class, going-on middle-aged couple. So it's a nice little movie about those sorts of people. I've been saying for quite a while that a lot of the movies we see nowadays, well, it's a minority of movies. But of that minority, a lot of them that we see with older characters seem to be aimed at the aging demographic of moviegoers. I'm certainly in that aging, if not already aged, demographic. And sometimes I think these movies are just constructed as vehicles to put some aging actor into a story with a bunch of aging people so that people like me can sit in the audience and say, ah, yes, isn't that just like real life? In this case, we have people who are more middle-aged. They're not particularly old, but they're not particularly young either, and they're family people. And again, I think this is aiming at the audience that is not just interested in the latest superhero movies, as so many of today's younger moviegoers appear to be. So I had a good time watching You Hurt My Feelings. It's not all that long. I think it's maybe a little longer than it has to be. And it has some times when I really laughed. It's a funny movie a lot of the times. And it has some real dramatic feeling to it, too, as well. So if you like Julia Louis-Dreyfus, if you like the work of Nicole Holofcener or any of the other people involved in this movie, it's a good bet. It's a very, very nice movie for easy summertime viewing. Turning next to a French film, The Worst Ones, or in French, Les Pires. And this is, in a way, it's a movie about worst ones, although that title is maybe a bit ironic. Here we have a movie about the making of a movie. So we have a fictional movie about the making of another fictional movie. And it was directed by the team of Lisa Akoka and Romain Garay, who also wrote it along with a third writer. It is the story of a making of a movie, and the director of the movie that we are watching being made wants his movie to be as realistic as it possibly can. His name is Gabriel, and he is directing this movie, and he has decided, it's about a downscale, sort of low-rent neighborhood in Paris, and he has decided, it's not in Paris, it's in a town, Boulogne-sur-Mer, and it's a poor place, not a lot of money there, a lot of underprivileged people, and in order to get as much authenticity as possible into his movie, he has decided to cast non-professional actors, that is, non-trained, non-experienced actors, to play the young people, they're almost all very young people, in his movie. So, he's got four young people who he chose. They all live in a housing project in this poor, poor, underprivileged suburb. They're playing characters who are not all that dissimilar from themselves. Again, these are actors that we are watching, playing characters not all that dissimilar from themselves in a movie that we are watching being made. One of them is a young girl who is played, they're cast to play a pregnant teenager, a pregnant 15-year-old girl. And she herself is kind of an outcast, this young girl who's chosen for the part. Then there's a boy who just recently got out of reform school, you might say, who is going to play her lover, who has just gotten out of reform school. So there are some other people, too, and they're playing, again, characters who are a little bit like themselves. And this runs into all kinds of pretty interesting complications. For one thing, we are watching a movie about the making of a movie, and that's a little bit unusual in itself. There have certainly been a lot of movies like that before, but it's not the way most movies are. And we're watching this interesting situation because the directors of this movie, The Worst Ones, have chosen non-professional, non-experienced actors to play the non-professional, non-experienced actors who are making the film within the film. So it's an interesting situation, and what we watch are the interactions among these young people themselves as they make their movie within the movie. We watch their interactions with the adults around them, and especially with the director, Gabriel. One just can't take it anymore and decides to leave the production, which is certainly a crisis for Gabriel. Others stay on. All along, the movie that is being made within the movie is building toward its big climax, which you know is going to be a very big deal scene, and we're wondering if the young actor, who, again, not experienced, non-professional, is going to be able to handle this and get it done. It has to be done for reasons that I won't give away in one single take. It can only be done once, and is this young kid going to be able to pull this off? So that's a little bit of suspense near the end of the film. But mainly, we are just watching the process of this movie get made, and we're watching our own non-professional, non-experienced, non-actors play people more or less like themselves in this movie. And again, it's called The Worst Ones because some people who are around the production are saying he's chosen all these kids with problems to play these kids with problems in his movie. They're the worst ones. Why did he hire the worst ones? Why did he get the worst ones? Well, of course, the reason is he wants authenticity, but we might wonder, is authenticity really worth it? these troubled young people are playing troubled young people. And is this going to put all kinds of strain and psychological difficulty on them? And is it worth it in the name of art or entertainment or whatever this is? So The Worst Ones is a worthwhile movie because it raises questions like this. It also is just a pretty absorbing drama to watch. I really was very much absorbed in it, and I found it very successful. It's been beating around the circuit for a little while now, but it's pretty readily available on streaming, and I do recommend it. It's one of the better French films to reach American shores in recent times. The Worst Ones is far from the worst movie that I've seen lately. And now let us get to the last film, which I think is far and away the best of the three good movies that I've talked about today, Reality. And yes, it sounds like a movie about reality, and in a way it is. In fact, it very much is. But it's really a movie about the well-known person, Reality Winner. That is, of course, her real name. And she was arrested some years ago, not that many, a few years ago, for having distributed secret information, secret government information about Russian interference in the 2016 United States election, having spirited this information out of the intelligence community, which is where she worked, and put it into distribution. So that's what it's about. And again, this is all real, real, real. The movie's not a documentary. I'll get to that in a moment. But Reality Winner is a real person. She is in prison at this very moment. And the reason is that she spirited some information out of her, using her job, her position, as having access to highly classified intelligence. She spirited this information out and posted it and got it into circulation, and she was found out and she was arrested. And again, she is in prison to this day. Now, the movie Reality is about Reality Winner. But it is also a movie, even though it's not a documentary, with a very strong dose of reality itself, because all the dialogue in the movie comes from FBI recording of the day when she was arrested. And that is what this movie shows. The movie is not completely in real time. That is, 1 minute of story time does not equal 1 minute of time that we're watching the film. But it's close, because what the movie shows is more or less from beginning to end the process that took place when she was arrested. The FBI show up at her house. They say they got to talk with her. They ask her if she knows why they're there. She says, no, I have no idea. And then the interrogation starts. It starts outside the house in her yard. Then it moves inside her house into a vacant room that she has there. And we are hearing dialogue spoken by actors, which is 100% taken, or so the filmmakers say, and I believe them, from the FBI recording that was made on that fateful day. And that is what we are seeing in the movie. Now, what makes all this worthwhile? Well, first of all, it's real history. It happened, and not that many years ago. Secondly, the acting in this movie is so, so, so excellent. I am so impressed by it. Again, all the dialogue is coming from real life, but it is just first-rate acting, and primarily, first and foremost, by Sydney Sweeney, who plays Reality Winner. And it is just a virtuoso performance. And apparently Sweeney did an enormous amount of really, really elaborate preparation for this. She bulked up a little bit because Reality Winner was, along with working in an intelligence agency for the United States government, she was a CrossFit instructor and she did yoga and that sort of thing. So Sweeney got herself so that she would look right for the part. And she listened a great deal to recorded material of the real Reality Winner, apparently spoke with Reality Winner a bit over Zoom and learn to get her voice and so forth and so on. But I don't care about the authenticity of that so much as it's just a virtuoso performance. And all of the FBI agents are, again, first-rate performances, but I have to mention mainly Josh Hamilton, who is sort of the most visible of the two main FBI agents who are doing the interrogation. He, and also all the others, but it is just excellent acting. So I identified with the character of Reality Winner so much. I don't work for an intelligence agency. I am not in trouble with the government that I know of, at least. I'm not a woman. I have all these differences from her, but boy, when those FBI agents show up, you can just sense how tense she is and how anxious she is and how all of this could go in any direction that we can't even be sure of where it's going to go. Well, we pretty much know how it comes out if you remember the real-life case. But just moment to moment, I just found it enormously absorbing, gripping and suspenseful. And it all comes to its preordained conclusion, but I just found it beautifully worked out. The movie was shot in real time, which is to say it's shot over a period of many days, but they were shooting it in the order of the script. Normally, movies are not made that way. Normally, movies are made where all the scenes in this location are shot together, and then all the scenes in this other location are shot together, no matter what order they appear in the film. This movie was shot in the order in which the story actually takes place, and I think that adds a subliminal sense of even additional reality to this movie called Reality. So, Reality is streaming now. You can see it pretty easily if you have access to the proper services, and I just think it is far and away one of the very, very best movies I have seen so far in 2023. Reality, starring the amazing Sydney Sweeney and Josh Hamilton and others. It is just a terrific, terrific movie. And by the way, the first film to be directed by Tina Satter, and I hope that she keeps directing, because she directed this was a play before she turned it into a movie, and now she has done a superb job directing this movie. So kudos to all. Reality, an excellent, excellent movie. And that is my somewhat reality-based story this week.